Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremen.
And I'm Lara Chan-Baker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast on creative project management and production and just making things happen in general from the Jackie Winter Group, which is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. This week, we talk about the experience of burning out and why creative fields are so susceptible to burnout. We also look at what project burnout might look like and how to look after ourselves and avoid it altogether. But first, of course, we ask, how are we all doing? Bianca, how are you?
So great.
Not buying it.
I know. I'm kind of exhausted.
Well, that's very, very on theme for today. And today in our Freaky Friday role reversal, we have Bianca in the studio and Lara in our New York office. Lara, how are you going?
I'm so good. I am never, ever, ever coming home. Sorry, guys.
You've fallen in love with my favorite city.
It's the best. I can get enchiladas at like any time.
Actually, that's something that did happen to me this morning. I walked out. I mean, I was here quite early and I tried to get a coffee at 7:45 and the cafe wasn't open, which is very un-New York.
Very Melbourne.
So before we get into our main topic today, we'll just go through the deep recesses of our professional development Slack channel, talk about some of the links we've been going through. I don't know if this will make sense for our Australian listeners. Did you guys have the This Is Your Brain on Drugs PSA? Where it was like,
I've only seen it made fun of on Robot Chicken.
Right. So, I mean, it was a PSA in the 80s in America or 90s where it was like, you know, it was like, this is your brain. It was an egg and this is your brain on drugs. So frying the egg. It looked delicious. But anyway, this article is from the New York Times all about your brain on podcast. So I thought this was a bit relevant. Lara, give us the skinny on this.
I mean, it's just a short article, but basically a team of research scientists from the University of California made a whole lot of people listen to podcasts, specifically episodes from the Moth Radio Hour, which is a, you know, super emotive storytelling podcast, while using a scanner to track their brain activity. So they gave them basically lots of MRIs and looked at what parts of the brain lit up while they listened to podcasts and then sort of looked at that data to see if it could predict like what parts of the brain would light up with other podcast episodes. And yeah, they've got some of the imagery there and it's interesting.
Yeah, the imagery is great. I also like how they kind of track different word clouds. So basically they were able to map, you know, what words were kind of, I guess, triggering kind of what feelings. Mm. So yeah, some interesting stuff in there.
My friend actually posted, I saw on Twitter this morning, I think a follow-up, which was from the New York Times, This Is Your Brain on Art. So I'm looking forward to reading that one too.
The next two links came from the Swiss Link Friday link pack. If you're not subscribed or read Swiss Miss, it's definitely worth checking out on Friday or Saturdays when she posts it. This one had a bit of a clickbait title, but like, again, like I wouldn't have looked at it if it wasn't on Swiss Miss, but it was from Upworthy and it says, he was always on his phone. Then he made this incredible change. You can try too.
That is so clickbaity.
It is clickbait, but I think, you know, it really, there is some interesting things there, and I'm really kind of talking about, I guess, how to break the, I guess, the phone checking loop. I'm not going to go so far as to say,
are you reading this article on your phone?
Maybe. No, I actually wasn't. But I mean, so many things there. It's like, I definitely have realized in the last year, like how I think maybe addicted to the phone I am.
Oh, and God, getting, I can't watch something on Netflix without also scrolling through Instagram at the same time, which
is really bad.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about this article is very straightforward. It's basically kind of 10 things that one person did to use their phone less. And a lot of it is just really kind of breaking the physical connection between you and your phone, and which I think sounds surprisingly easy, but it isn't in many times. But I thought like there were some, like some of these suggestions here are really kind of concrete. Like, stop checking the phone in your car. Stop checking it during TV commercials. You know, like
I never check my phone in my car.
Well, you don't drive. So not fair.
But no, it's like I do try. I think, you know, if I'm on the subway, I try and listen to music so that I'm more aware of what's going on. I think looking, like seeing other people with their head in their phone makes you more inclined to not do that.
Look, I think in 20 years, people will kind of look back in how we look and interact with our phones, like maybe how we kind of look at smoking. I think there's already so much now, like a big backlash in terms of, especially when you look at UX design and how people are developing apps and products to be sticky to encourage this activity, and how this is kind of being, I guess, looked at as a bit of a negative development in some ways. So,
well, I think this is really interesting, and it kind of leads into our topic on burnout.
Oh my God, yes, exactly. And before we get into that, we'll just go to our last link, which is 5 mantras for dealing with difficult people and 10 situations from, I don't know if it was a surprise or not, just to see this kind of on Oprah.com, but I mean, this was definitely
prescient. I only just realized that this is on Oprah.com. Of course it's wonderful.
It really is. I mean, it's 5 things from a book called Habit Changers, 81 Game-Changing Mantras. I mean, some of it is a bit kind of fluffy, but I think in terms of what we talk about, I guess, cultivating empathy and understanding really where someone else is coming from, there are some really interesting points here. Mm. And I think that's always kind of one of the topics here. Again, it's going to sound so Instagram-y, but it just kind of says presume goodwill, which I think is just something interesting to kind of keep in mind, because so many times you think about people who are being really difficult. It doesn't matter what side of the equation you're on. You just have to think, like, I don't think anyone ever kind of means to be intentionally kind of difficult. No. It's usually because something else is happening, you know, in a project that you might not be aware of. And yeah, just kind of, I think coming back to these real kind of core topics in any creative discussion about really trying to see things from the other person's perspective is essential, even though it's
totally
so simple.
When I opened this, I kind of like, I first just like scrolled down the page without reading it. And I looked at like the big pink headings and I was like, I'm going to hate this. But when I actually read it, there's like so much valuable sense in here. I thought, like, even just the first one for me is like one that I sometimes have to remember, the one that's like, don't push buttons that don't need to be pushed, you know?
Especially that, like, big red one.
I know, that's killing me. No, no, but just like when things are tense and when you, not even so much at work, but even like in sort of personal situations, like, and you know that you can sort of, I mean, I'm an argumentative person. I'm quite stubborn, and you know, you can drive your point home, but it's not necessarily worthwhile. And so fighting that battle between being right and getting the best outcome, you know, it's good to remember.
Mm. Yeah, I really liked this article from a client management perspective.
Mm. Yeah, I've also been listening to this audiobook called How to Talk So Children Will Listen and Listen So Children Will Talk, because talking to a 3.5-4-year-old girl is difficult. And like, you know, while I was listening to this audiobook, I was like, man, there are some great things that I can actually bring into the workplace. And I think, you know, it's real kind of simple stuff. So yeah, it's the simple stuff that we really love and is the most effective, but you have to kind of keep coming back to it. So we will put the links to this in our show notes and on our podcast webpage at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. You can sign up to our tiny letter as well to get these links every Friday and a note when our episode has dropped at tinyletter.com/JackieWinter. And I think we will move on from there. Getting into our main topic for today is all really about avoiding burnout. And this is kind of something that I've seen come up on, again, both sides of the creative equation, you know, from clients and artists. It's something that I think we're seeing kind of more and more. And it's a question that I get asked a lot, like, how do you avoid burnout? How do you manage doing lots of different things and kind of do them well? And I think there are so many expectations that are kind of foisted on us that it is a real issue. It's a real part about being in the workplace or just being alive. So we are here, are 3 people. We're lucky to love our jobs. But yes, we have all experienced burnout in one way or another at different points in time. So we're just going to take a look at today what burnout technically is, what it feels like, and some strategies to avoid it or deal with it kind of while we're there. So I guess, yeah, for Lara and Bianca, I mean, it's also a semi-awkward question to ask, like, as you're employer, but I'm curious, like, yeah, have you guys experienced burnout and kind of what was it like for you? Like, has it happened here at Jackie Winter or beyond?
I mean, I definitely have in all sorts of roles, and even, you know, during my degree, like, I think it's natural to experience some level of burnout no matter what the job is. So don't be too scared, Jeremy. you know what I think?
How would you define it though? Like, is there kind of like a technical or, you know, physical like standard for what burnout actually is?
Well, I don't know. I feel like it might be different for different people and their thresholds. Like, I think I'm someone that pushes my body very hard in terms of taking on a lot, doing a lot. I'm not someone that really needs that much downtime, but every couple of months, I probably have a moment where I do.
Where you need downtime.
Yes.
And you think that's kind of a signal that you've burnt out.
Maybe. Or it's just the cycle.
Yeah. I mean, as Bianca said, like different things will cause burnout for different people. I think like for me, when I have felt truly burnt out, it's always been a combination of like both being overworked and being bored. I mean, neither are sustainable long term on their own either. But like, you know, I can stand being overworked for a time if I am really enjoying and I'm excited and passionate about the task that I'm doing. And on the flip side, you know, I can stand being bored or doing something really monotonous for a time if the workload is really minimal. And so I also have like tons of free time to fill with things that I actually do enjoy outside of work. But I think the combination of both being under a lot of pressure, you know, physically and mentally, and not enjoying the work that I'm doing really truly sends me over the edge into like full on burnout territory.
And how does that manifest for you?
For me, I think it like I get a, like a total disconnect with what I'm doing, you know, like it's just a, I guess I don't know how to explain it, but just general dissatisfaction, and that will bleed into other parts of your life. I think that's when I really know that I'm burnt out, like when that being burnt out at work bleeds into feeling burnt out in my personal life as well.
Mm. You stop enjoying things that you usually would.
Yeah, look, totally. I mean, there's going to be, and there are kind of, it's hard to talk about burnout without kind of talking about other kind of mental health kind of parallels, like whether it's kind of, you know, more serious manifestations like, you know, depressive or anxiety disorders, things like that. But I think kind of, I think burnout is a bit more of like a precursor to that. Like, I don't know if it's kind of like as full blown as some of those things can be, but it's
but
almost.
But it can certainly lead to that, I think.
You
know, like I think there are probably, for me anyway, there are like two distinctly like different types of what I would call burnout. Like there's a sort of short-term burnout that might last for like a night or two, you know, when you've had a particularly tough couple of days. And, you know, that's the kind of burnout that sort of wears off after a bit of rest and a beer, you know, Bianca, as you said, like, you know, a little bit of downtime. And then there's the sort of really truly concerning burnout, you know, the kind of burnout that lasts day in and day out and that causes you to sort of totally rethink your life, or you know, at least it should.
Yes, and we should obviously kind of like, you know, preface that to like, if you know, if that is kind of something that you are feeling or are experiencing, like there's so many options to get professional help, and I always suggest everyone has that no matter what kind of stage you're at. I think that one thing I've always kind of talk proudly about how I've been in therapy like more than half my life.
That's such an American thing.
It is.
I was like, everyone in New York is in therapy.
But like, you know, if you are someone who works in the creative industry, like if you are an athlete and you're kind of using your body kind of day in and day out, like you would be getting regular physio and regular kind of body work and things like that. If you work in the creative industries and you're using your brain kind of day in, day out as well, you're going to, you know, you're going to feel the effects. And I think, you know, talking to somebody professionally is an amazing thing to do.
And even nurturing a community around you and having a supportive network.
Oh, definitely. That does kind of lead into the general fact that working in advertising can be especially demanding. And like it's kind of known for having, a culture that kind of works all the time and kind of works you physically and mentally in ways that aren't, akin to other industries. So I don't know. I'm really curious to hear from you guys why you think kind of that's the case.
Mm. Like, well, I mean, it's incredibly fast paced. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you're generally always dealing with like super tight timelines and strict budgets. And on top of that, you're dealing in creative work. And that in itself is so highly subjective and personal and murky to evaluate. And that can just make things stressful and incredibly demanding.
Yeah, there's this pressure to perform on demand as a creative or as someone that is facilitating creative with these like really expensive media buyers on either end. So there's this added pressure of if you don't deliver, you're not going to have an ad that's going to be made.
Yeah, and it's also a very kind of public facing thing as well. So, you know, if you're a creative at an agency and you know, like, you know, it doesn't matter how big or how small things are going to be seen, it's your work that's going to be seen by kind of other people and affecting other people. But yeah, I mean, that definitely kind of leads us, I guess, some more dangerous cultural precedents in the industry where people are expected to be on and working kind of all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's this really beautiful blog post from 2012, which I had to go scroll back through my Twitter to find, but it's by a guy called Linz Redding, who was an advertising creative who got cancer, and it's called A Short Lesson in Perspective, and
oh,
he really talks about... Oh, it's beautiful. This is, if you read anything from this episode, I think this one, I think it really like, it hit home for me, but he talks about kind of the it's just advertising. You know, at the end of the day, that's all it is. And, you know, the it's unfortunately an industry that does kind of hold creative people ransom and maybe like exploit young people and kind of cycle through young people. You know, there's always going to be someone younger and hungrier that wants to kind of get in and get things. Yeah. And so it's just kind of this like revolving door and this rat race that you sort of can't get out of. But,
you know, you could say that about any creative industry as well. Mm. I mean, I don't want to kind of gloss over like, you know, the great things about that. But yeah, of course. I mean, you could also just say it's just work.
Yeah.
In another way.
I think also, you know, advertising is particularly demanding and stressful because it can be quite unpredictable as both perhaps a client or someone that is creating work. It doesn't really follow, like, I mean, of course, you might have a budget that needs to be spent, but there's always things that sort of come up that are unexpected. And there's an unpredictability about, you know, when things might come in and what's needed and what the challenges that are going to be thrown at you. And it's very reactive. As, you know, a creative, financially, if you're a freelancer, it can be hard to manage. And yeah.
Well, it's getting more and more so at the moment. And like, yeah, there are lots of kind of things that happen culturally, especially with kind of with screen mediums as well. Like, you know, media buys are so much more, are so accelerated at the moment. And there's so much turnover that happens on the client side where people want to, you know, need to be making things faster and getting results faster. So there's things that exist there as kind of the precursor for that. I think, though, you know, one thing we want to kind of touch on is how you avoid burning yourself out and how do you kind of get yourself out of that hole. But I think one of the things that you need to address is that that's kind of a hard thing to do unless you've actually kind of experienced it first, because it's like everyone, it is kind of such a personal thing. There are kind of there are some universal rules, but it's a very kind of personal thing in terms of how you react to certain situations. And I think, you know, it's kind of like any kind of project. It's like, it's if you look at your life as a creative project, you know, burnout is a symptom that kind of something has kind of gone wrong and you need to kind of correct it in a way that's very kind of personal to you in terms of how you work. And it's different for everybody. But yeah, I'm curious
also
to hear.
Like physical sort of problems, physical symptoms, like, you know, I guess the key thing is to look at not just correcting the symptom, but correcting, you know, the actual cause. You know, often the problem with burnout is that if the cause of your burnout is that you're so under the pump that you're just like totally drained and hating life, you're often too busy to actually think constructively about your situation and then do anything about it. Like, I know that I've often just ridden it out, not because that was a deliberate strategy in any way, but more because I just didn't have the mental capacity to do anything else. And in terms of like just treating the symptom, sometimes I might like swing past a cute shop on the way home from work and buy myself a sort of, you know, tiny, shiny thing to make myself feel better. But, you know, retail therapy is not actually therapeutic. And luckily, I've generally always come through on the other side feeling really good about my job again and feeling positive about my situation. But in terms of actually avoiding it in the first place, I think you have to look at really like both your work circumstances, which encompasses like, you know, everything from the role itself, the way you manage it, your relationships with your boss and coworkers and clients, your commute even, your seating arrangement and so on. And then also at your life outside of work, because they're intrinsically linked, you know? So that might be like your exercise habits, your diet, your social time, hobbies, living situation, mental health and so on. Because I think realistically it takes a healthy balance of all of those things to actually avoid burnout. And a healthy balance is going to mean different things for different people.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, and the thing that is really difficult as well is that, like I was saying before, like some of the things that cause burnout are really kind of institutional and cultural, and they're things that you can't really kind of fully change. That's why having the conversations and talking about it is really important in that way. But yeah, I mean, is there anything specific, Lara, like of those things that you mentioned that you've done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's been a mixture of a few key things that have helped. You know, I think the first is learning to recognize when I'm on the edge of burnout and like knowing those personal telltale signs and making a change before I go beyond that point of no return. And I think the second thing that's been so crucial for me is really getting both my physical and mental health in order. And that's everything from, you know, getting enough sleep, eating right, learning to truly enjoy exercise, repairing my self-esteem, meditating, and you know, and a whole lot more things. And I think thirdly, it's been about finding a way to do more of the work tasks that I really love and less of what I hate. So delegating where possible, evolving my role and my working style into something that fits with who I am and what I want to get out of work, but, you know, whilst also making sure that I achieve everything I need to as required by my role and dictated by you, Jeremy.
Bea, what about you?
I mean, for me, I think a lot of it is about stepping back and actually, you know, getting perspective and looking at what I'm doing and remembering, connecting back to what it is that I love about my job and I guess the higher purpose about what I do. And that can immediately put, you know, many things in perspective if I am feeling stressed about like a day-to-day task. Like I find actually, you know, now with experience, like I don't get that stressed during the day, like about things that come up. I just get overwhelmed with the amount of things that I have to do. And so taking a step back and stopping and, you know, revisiting like my to-do list is really helpful for me. But I really like switching off. Like I try not to really do much work over the weekend. Like I try and kind of fill my weekend with things that are quite immersive, like whether it's, you know, live music or like actually walking through the city and really taking in what's around me or going to an art gallery and really like immersing myself in something that is beyond a screen or something that feels familiar to work. I think one of the other things as well is that I use to try and avoid burnout is asking for help. I think Lara, you and I think have quite similar personalities in how we work. And one thing that has been really helpful is trying to kind of shake a little bit of perfectionism. And Jeremy, you know, we've worked on many sort of big projects together and have kind of had, you know, discussions about like the way that maybe I work and the way that I could work better and more effectively without actually putting too much pressure on myself. And I think part of that is actually just sort of just getting in and actually like making a decision or getting started on something and just, you know, like then actually kind of like catching up and seeing what happens as opposed to trying to make sure that everything's perfect.
Absolutely. It's so funny that you mentioned that because like that was 100% the other major point that I was going to make. Like Jeremy, you have as well pointed, you know, seen me burning myself out because of, you know, wanting to perfect every little thing, you know, and I guess trying to train me to recognize when it's worth it and when it's not, and on the things that aren't that important to like learn to let go and just know when they're done enough. And like that has been like enormously valuable in avoiding burnout because then you can actually prioritize. But I think, you know, I'm lucky to have had a boss that recognizes that, you know, and seen that as something to work on because it can be hard to see that in yourself.
Sure, Lara.
Yeah, give me a raise.
No, look, I mean, those are some really good points. And I think that, yeah, it's really hard to kind of find that line as well, because I think, you know, we want to be like, I try to approach the work we do as a craftsperson in a way, like, and I want to kind of keep a high standard because I do think there are many things are done really poorly. And like when there's so many shortcuts being taken, I want to make sure that we are kind of being excellent. But it's hard to do that, like in the current environment. You raise a really good point there. And B, I loved what you were kind of saying about, you know, getting away from screens, just like we were talking about at the beginning. I mean, when, you know, one of the more kind of technical definitions of burnout is like, if, you know, your neural pathways, like if you're constantly activating your, you know, your brain to kind of just keep giving you these dopamine hits over and over and over again through, you know, looking at screens and they're designed to kind of do that. Like you literally kind of burn out those kind of connections. And that's why you kind of feel mentally exhausted. And being able to take a break from those things and actually, I mean, I think the physical side of things is really important. And you might think that it's like you're looking at a screen and it's mental, but it actually does have a lot of physical kind of correlations there.
Totally. I think the other big thing, Bianca, when you brought up before that that beautiful blog post, it reminded me, I guess it's like sort of a technique I've had to take on sometimes with some projects over the years as well, is this idea of like learning to separate myself from my work when necessary. And like, it's a fine line, like, you know, you don't want to go past that point into like not caring, because that's not what it's about at all. And that doesn't help anyone. But it's also, you know, I guess learning to take, you know, not to take certain things personally. I had a really tricky project once that went for a really long time, and it took an enormous amount of my energy. It sort of consumed my whole life. And things weren't going super well, even with all of the work that I was doing. And, you know, at one point I was just feeling so burnt out by it that, you know, and I just had to remind myself that even if it did all go to shit, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It was just advertising. And, you know, that I had done everything within my sort of realm to ensure its success. And some things were just totally out of my control. And I had to just sort of keep repeating to myself that, you know, I needed to work hard now, but those feelings of total exhaustion and stress would be gone soon. And that alone made like a tremendous difference for me. Like suddenly it just didn't feel as bad. And as cliche as this sounds, I guess like the light at the end of the tunnel kind of lit up the whole tunnel, and it made it easier to get through the project, you know, as a whole.
Well, let's talk about Project Burnout a bit more, B. I mean, yeah, we've kind of been talking about things a bit more kind of generally, but when we're working on a project, you know, what do you mean by kind of Project Burnout? I mean, how can clients and producers help keep everyone motivated, you know, like on a project that is big across the long term?
Yeah, I mean, I love working in advertising because we work on very quick turnaround projects. But there's, you know, every now and again, like I don't mind working on something that runs its course over a long period of time if I know at the start what I'm getting myself into. But I mean, like long-term projects can be challenging because you're, you know, perhaps not checking in as regularly. And every time you sort of like jump back into a project, it takes more energy to sort of like get back into the headspace of a project. That's where like you really need to sort of have some things in place to kind of keep everyone motivated. And I think one of the ways is encouragement and kind of like speaking empathetically to whoever it is that you're working with and understanding what maybe the challenges are and trying to understand everyone's perspective and you know, acknowledging that it may be hard and you understand that it's hard, but this is like there's a higher purpose and we're going to get there and how do we get there?
I think like as a project manager, you know, in the end, it's like it's our role to keep a lid on that chaos as much as possible. And, you know, I guess making sure that we're setting like really specific tasks for specific and realistic deadlines. So it's like trying to break things into edible chunks for your team and then encouraging communication throughout. I mean, you know, and then being open about discussing burnout. I think, I mean, it might be harder to do with a client, but at least within your internal team, you know, being open, as you just said, about discussing the fact that, yeah, it is hard, but we're going to get through it, you know?
It's interesting. I think there are also kind of generational issues that come to play as well. And this is why I kind of go back to an earlier thing of why it's important for everyone to meet each other at the same time and kind of know who's working on a project. Because, yeah, there are some times where I just want to kind of scream at a project. It's like, it doesn't matter, you know, it's like, or this change, like no one's going to kind of notice it, you know, or like, but like everyone has different approaches to how they kind of deal with their craft and be like, no, well, it actually, you know, I can look at things from the other side and say, you know, someone might notice this. It's like, oh yeah, it's like, it's no one kind of sees how the box is made, but it's the construction of the box that kind of makes a thing. So there's lots of, you know, craftsmanship metaphors that you can kind of bring into this.
Your but favorite it, it's, thing like, to
it really is. But yeah, it's like, you know, when do you kind of draw that line when you're dealing with things like revision and things like, you know, this is why having kind of a brief is kind of important, so you can make sure that you're kind of tying things to places. And I think when people are aware that there's other kind of, you know, humans that are involved in the project, it makes giving kind of frivolous feedback a bit more challenging, I think.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we speak a lot about rapport and building rapport at the start of the project is one of those things that is going to make all of those conversations easier and you know, remind you that there is humans on the other sides of
totally.
The project.
And then throughout that as well, like it's important to be flexible in a project, but also not being so overtly flexible that they start to take advantage of that, I think. Like that's where things come into like excess revisions. You know, it's making sure that people do understand that there is a bit of a process to it and you are always trying to move things forward and like recognizing when something just like isn't working and finding a new approach instead of trying the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think that really boils down to trust as one of the biggest things, because if you trust somebody to kind of do their job, then, you know, people just kind of do it.
Totally. And also coming back to like what Bianca was saying about downtime, like I think if you're in charge of the schedule, as we sort of are in collaboration with the client, like especially on long projects,
making sure that the schedule acknowledges downtime and like weekend time away from the project and acknowledges that that's important, and trying not to set deadlines that are going to, you know, push people to their absolute limit.
Mm, yeah, especially if you have the time. Like one of, I think, you know, talking, going back about personal burnout and sort of culturally and institutionally sort of like where we're at, like I do find that I had a better work day in Australia because I was able to contain it to, you know, 10 to 6. Whereas in America, I do find that clients are online all of the time and, you know, I'm receiving approval at midnight and then expected to get the artist on the phone at 10 o'clock the next morning. And there isn't so much of a, the workday isn't really contained into working
hours.
Totally.
I'm finding that hard. It's fluid.
Yeah. And I think acknowledging that, you know, yeah, when you, as you were saying, when you are actually setting up a schedule and when you are kind of looking at realistically what can be achieved, you know, and making, respecting everyone's time is really helpful.
Totally. But Jeremy, like, I'm interested to know, like, I know you said you're asked this a lot, but it's interesting for me as someone who's never really had to manage a team or anything. Like, how do you, as a boss, manage our burnout? How do you help us avoid burnout?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think it's, you know, just like you have to experience burnout personally to know how you deal with it personally, like you have to kind of get that feedback from a team to realize how you deal with it in that way as well. And that's one of the most difficult things, because you need to make sure that there's enough people to kind of handle the work, and you don't want there to be too many, and you don't want there to be kind of not enough. I think really kind of fostering a culture of communication and open communication is really important. And I think where people feel comfortable that they can kind of come to me and say like, oh, I think I've got a bit too much on, or like, I don't know how I'm kind of feeling about this. But also just being, you know, having that emotional intelligence enough to know when someone might not be willing to, or like, you know, especially when, with new people, it's, you know, they might not be willing to kind of speak up. So, you know, creating that culture of communication is important, and we do that through our WIPs in a big way. So making sure that we know kind of what is on everyone's plate, and making sure that we have kind of systems as well that we can easily kind of get at a glance ideas. And this is where there's a great kind of overlap between, you know, technology and kind of culture as well, because yeah, like how do you kind of track, you know, how much everyone is kind of working on something? So we haven't created a workplace where people need to kind of clock in and clock out. And this is, again, comes back to what we're talking about, value-based pricing. Like I think if our business model was all about kind of hours and like, you know, hours worked in certain things translating to money, I think it would create a much more, I think, hostile environment. And that's where I like, you know, completely disconnecting those things. And I think that frees us up to think about our time a bit more differently. And I think, yeah, just kind of like my philosophy, and I can't imagine thinking about things any other way, but if people are burnt out, then they're not good to you. You know, it's like you can't really work if you're burnt out. So it's in my best interest to keep everyone working the best they can. And people work their best when they're engaged with the work and they're happy in the workplace.
That's why we have so many dogs in the office, Jeremy.
That is why we have 12 dogs and a small petting zoo. And creating culture is a thing that is, I think, is that's how I've kind of pretty much approached
it. I think one of the things that I really value about our workplace is that we do have a real culture of kind of like personal and professional growth. Like we're always sharing, I guess, like learnings with each other, and we're always encouraging each other to, I guess, foster different skills or, and there is, yeah, there's a really nice kind of like sense of support and openness in the way that we're able to communicate with each other. So I think you've done a pretty good job.
I think, yeah, but we're also lucky to be at a kind of a certain size as well, kind of where it's possible kind of do that hands-on. Like I have no, this is why like I'm so interested in hearing how much bigger companies that have hundreds or even thousands of employees kind of do this, and whether even if it is kind of possible. And I don't know. Like I think we're at that kind of sweet spot where it is kind of possible to manage, but yeah, any bigger would be a challenge.
But like Jeremy as well, like I, you know, obviously Jerky Winter just celebrated like 10 years of existence, and I guess, like, how have you avoided burnout over the time? Like, how have you maintained your level of interest and passion in what you do? You're still doing it today, and I imagine you're going to keep doing it for the foreseeable future.
This is a question I've been getting asked a lot because, I mean, as a relatively new parent, like, I've kind of now crossed over into the creative parent, quote, territory, where you have to kind of answer, like, how do you balance it all? And I guess there's two things here. I mean, the one thing that I will always consistently come back to is this whole idea of kind of just, you know, of spinning plates and shifting priorities, and the fact is that, you know, something always kind of will kind of have to give. I've referenced this like a million times, probably even on this podcast before, but the David Sedaris four burner theory from his short story Hey Kookaburra, about how you have, I think, family, friends, health, and work, and in order to be successful, like, you have to turn one of the burners off, and to be really successful you have to turn two of them off. I think kind of there's some truth in that, where, you know, for me, you know, personally, I think to grow the business, different things have had to be shut off at kind of different times. And I think that's has more to do with trying to, you know, be good at something. But I think that also comes back again to this kind of craftsmanship metaphor in terms of keeping interest. Like, I kind of look at Jackie Winter as a business as kind of something that, you know, for me as the business owner, like, I'm really kind of interested in kind of sustaining the business and growing it, and really, I mean, not growing it like to like a huge company, but kind of cultivating it like a bonsai in that way. What I'm kind of seeing a lot of now is people looking at businesses and creative practices as how to be kind of sustainability, like similar to, you know, environmental sustainability, where it's not about kind of unbridled growth, but like, how can you keep a business going for 10 years, for 5 years?
Oh, and that How I Built This, about the Patagonia episode of How I Built This, is great.
I love that podcast. But yeah, no, it's a very kind of similar thing. It's like, you know, we're not kind of in like a lot of businesses, especially in the startup world, you know, are designed to be acquired or to be a $1 billion company. And it's like, well, I would love if we can kind of build modestly, but kind of slowly. And this idea of kind of honing something is really kind of satisfying. It's like making a giant kind of sculpture. And so I don't know, there's something intrinsically kind of nice about that. And I think for me, in addition to everything that we kind of talked about before, again, I can't overstate kind of the physical side of things enough. Like, you have to kind of have that kind of balance. Like, I mean, for me, it's ice hockey and meditation. Those are kind of my two things kind of outside of work. But yeah, I think, look, the bottom line here is, like, I think that it's if you have a long-term kind of perspective and a big picture perspective on kind of what you're doing, I think that could be a really big thing to kind of avoiding burnout, where when you are kind of burnt out, you're so focusing on really kind of the fire that's kind of happening right there, rather than taking a step back from it and looking at, like, well, how could we have prevented that in the first place? Or, you know, how do I kind of rebuild so that fire doesn't actually get started?
Very sage advice, Jeremy. I just have to say, you told me that four burners theory during my first review at Jackie Winter. And it was like, I mean, it's really like solid life advice, but also like kind of terrifying to have your boss tell you, like, hey, just turn off two of these things in your life so you can be successful at my company.
That's when I looked in your eyes and said, we're your family now.
That's exactly what happened. And 3.5 years later, I'm still here.
Well, look, we'd love to hear from anyone else on their own strategies or experiences of burnout, or other links that we can potentially kind of put in our show notes or come back to. You can email us anytime at podcast@jackiewinter.com. And I think we're all going to have a nice cup of tea and head into our day from now.
Let's do it.
Ending, as we like to do every week, is the most Melbourne and New York thing. Lara, being, I think this is your second time in New York, I think you've said that you could fill a whole episode with things that were the most New York thing, but maybe give us the greatest hits so far.
Okay. I mean, like, I've had like just some stereotypically New York experiences, and like the first day here, I had a cab stolen from me, and I also got a bagel at like 11 o'clock at night. So those were great. But I think like the thing that's most enjoyable is just how weird this city is. Like, it's just so weird. And then I feel like it enables me to be totally weird as well, which is great. But I mean, you guys know I'm like totally, totally dog mad. I want to pat every single dog that I see. And it's like driving me a bit crazy that like New York dogs just like don't stop for pats. Like, they are on a mission. And they're never off lead, so they can never just like run over to you. And like, anyway. But I was in the park the other day. I was walking through the park to work, and like, I am all for letting dogs lick your face. Like, I have no qualms with that. That's A-okay on my end. But this guy was like, okay, so the dog was like going to lick his face, and the guy had his tongue out as well. So he was like essentially making out with his dog, like in full daylight. Not that it would be better if it was in darkness, but like, it was just so, he had no shame. And like, the dog looked too happy. It was so creepy. No words.
Bianca, No words, no words. I don't know if that's even legal, but we'll come back to that.
Let's not.
Bianca, what's the most Melbourne thing that you've seen this week?
I was driving the other day and my friend was like, oh, hey, there's one of those banana graffiti things. And I was like, what are you talking about? And there's this, have you seen these squish banana that's like, this graffiti artist is like all around town. There's this squished banana.
What, like a real banana?
No, just like a aerosol banana peel. I cannot stop seeing it. It's everywhere.
Then he's doing his job. If all his stuff is up, that's good for him. For me, this is a screenshot that I took from The Age, which is like a photo of a guy in an apartment looking kind of forlorn. And the headline reads, "Young city folk fill homes and the voids in their hearts with plants."
Wait, that was front page of The Age?
In online. I mean, look, it's hard-hitting journalism, but also very, very true. Especially if you look in our office, like, yes, we fill our cold, dead hearts.
That's how we avoid burnout.
Every day here. Exactly. And with that, I think we'll wrap. Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Lara.
Thanks, Jeremy.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. And you can also sign up to our tiny letter at tinyletter.com/JackieWinter to get an email every Friday when our show is out, and all the links to our show notes and other things we talk about. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/JackieWinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details are on our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye!